This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Fish lovers of Hawaii, listen up, please, because there's some good news and some bad news. The bad news is that the state and federal governments have closed the main Hawaiian Islands fisheries for 7 bottom fish species. This closure affects the so-called Deep Seven, meaning Opakapaka, Kalikali, Onaga, Ehu, Jindai, sea bass, and Lehi. So from now until September 1st, you can't catch them, eat them, give them away, or even have one on your boat. The good news is that the Deep Seven fisheries of the northwestern Hawaiian Islands are loaded with fish and are open year-round. Not too many boats are allowed to fish the northwest these days, but you can ask your favorite fish store or restaurant to keep an eye out for you when their catches do arrive at the fish auction. So good luck and bon appetit.
Carol Cox Show. Another lovely day here in Honolulu. Just happy to be alive and anxious to get to talking, and thank you for joining in. Today, I have we're going to recap just real briefly. I have two people that Frank Scavo and Bob Folger from the Alliance Landfill in Pennsylvania Task Force. They appeared about 2 weeks ago, and they're calling to share some results that they're getting and some new developments in their efforts to have the landfill monitored. Bob and Frank, welcome.
Yes, Carol.
Good morning. Well, tell us what you got and some of the new developments that went on after you appeared on the show.
Well, Bob, this is Frank Scavo. I'll start off. What we've noticed since we sent out our registered letters to many of our elected officials, there's a lot of back channel and behind the scenes talk. And we were contacted by our Congressman Paul Konjorski to come in and sit down and talk with him. And we did that, and really it is a state issue, but I alerted them to the fact that, listen, there are landfills in California and Hawaii and other parts of Pennsylvania that are all struggling to verify and make sure that these landfills are safe. So I suggested federal legislation. So there's a lot of talk about landfills.
Okay, so are you getting any results as far as having appeared on the show, or are they concerned with that, or what's going on?
Bob, what do you say?
I would say definitely. They're out there now, and they are definitely listening, definitely, in a big part, Carol, we believe, due to your show and due to public radio. You have to get out there, and you have to speak.
Mm-hmm.
These are officials, public officials, congressional people, who, prior to being out there and prior to us speaking on programs like your own, wouldn't give us, in any other words, wouldn't give us the time of day prior to being on programs like yours.
I see. So
blatantly ignored our letters, and now, in fact, last night we have a community event here. Actually, one state representative actually came up to me last night and actually came over and approached me. Well, actually, I went over and approached him, recognized me, and invited me again to his district office. This was a state representative. And again, he said, Bob, why don't you come over this week with Frank? We can sit down. We can talk about things some more. Maybe we can even present a state house bill and perhaps get proper air monitoring to present a house bill for this that is required in the state of Pennsylvania so that landfills have proper air monitoring.
So you've also had an invitation to meet with your governor, Ed Rendell?
Yes, we've had an invitation to meet next week with his administration.
Okay. And you've written up a letter, and we can find that letter on Alliance Task Force, Alliance Landfill Task Force.com?
Yes, it will be posted later today. We will be posting a copy of the letter to both our website and our blog spot.
And then this gentleman, the Senator Congressman Ken Jorski.
Congressman.
Now, he is a national, right, and very prominent.
Right.
Right?
Federal. He's the one that Fox News just did an expose on, a $10 million boondoggle event. So he's looking, put it this way, Carol, he's looking at getting some positive press and trying to prove his effectiveness. Well, you know what, if he can spearhead this issue, that's good. That's what he's elected to do. So, but I believe it's a direct result of appearing on perhaps your show, because naturally, if you have the landfill issue as the subject on your show, I believe there are those that either are in the employ of the landfill or have a direct benefit from the landfill that monitor your show. And if they hear that a group from Pennsylvania is joining with a group and a talk show host from Hawaii, you know what? That's pretty significant, Carol.
Mm-hmm. Well, little word of caution. Don't let them court you and tell you to come on in the room and sit down and talk. Hold your ground and get your facts and just keep pounding away. But I will check in with you folk, or feel free to give me a call. I just want to share your developments, and it sounds positive, with the people here, and that your congressman is concerned and your legislators are concerned, and maybe the people out there listening here in Honolulu with similar problems will expect the same or demand the same of our local legislators and governor. So
as we go, we'll find out if it's only skin deep.
Well, I'm sure you won't allow that, so you're not
right.
Superficial. You've been in this fight for a long time. But, gentlemen, thank you, and keep me posted on the meeting with the governor and what new developments.
We will.
All righty.
We will, Carol. Thank you very much for the time again today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, what we have is sounds like good results anytime there's a dialogue occurring, and the people were just simply ignored, and money's being handed back and forth for donations and campaign donations. And what we're doing right now is here in Honolulu, we're trying to look to see who's getting all of the stipends, which of our legislators and city councilmen or whomever are getting the favors from waste management here. And we hope to bring that to you in the next coming week or so. But anyway, as you know, the landfill here is up for expansion, and the deadline is July 7th. Anyway, we're going to change horses in the middle of the stream now, and my subject today that I want to discuss is, again, fish. And a lot of you have heard me talk about fish, and I don't want to beat a subject into the ground. But this one is so important, and the reason it's important is that just in the last 3-4 months, maybe you've heard me talk about the carbon monoxide and imported fish, folks, only 1% or less than 1% of the shipments of fish, shellfish, or seafood is inspected, less than 1%. And of that, I'm looking at the refusal actions by FDA in the last 3 or 4 months. You'd be astounded or shocked, I should say. It'd make you want to walk away from any fish when you walk into a store at the Safeway or Don Quixote's, or you walk into Time, Star Market, Foodland, wherever, Sack and Save. You will think twice. Just give you an example, and I'm going to have a guest here, Mr. Carlos Parisi, who is a former expert seafood person that has great knowledge and many years in the seafood business, import, export, or what have you. But just in May alone, the federal government, the Food and Drug Administration, on their website shows 172 shipments that were refused. And the reasons given, these shipments were contaminated with salmonella, histamines, and just simply filthy. This is straight from the federal government's website. You would be astounded. In April of 2008, 180 shipments were either refused totally or in part. In March 2008, 93 shipments of seafood shellfish were detained or re-exported or denied. February 2008, 124 shipments. January 2008, 133 shipments. And again, most of this was tuna, apaca-paca from other countries, crab meat, shrimp, and it is absolutely mind-boggling how it is that we don't have as many people getting sicker than what has been reported. But I'm going to welcome Mr. Carlos Parisi. And good morning, Carlos. Are you there?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Carlos.
How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Thank you for having me back on the show.
Well, thank you. I just couldn't miss this opportunity because you had offered some great insight and consistent with what it supports our concern, and I don't believe that we're getting the right amount of attention provided by our state agencies of the Department of Health. And if they are doing something, it sure is they're running deep and silent. So you heard me in my opening statement, hopefully, where we talked about less than 1% of the total fish and seafood products imported in the U.S. is inspected. What about what's your knowledge on this on the import? You were in fact in the business for some long time, so give us a little insight if you could.
Well, as you said, you know, our setup right now with Food and Drug, which is the federal agency in charge of checking and testing all these food products in general that we consume, as well as drug products. It just understaffed tremendously. They really, like you said, less than 1% of seafood is inspected. You're talking, you know, thousands of containers that are coming in every week, every month into this country. You had, for example, I was checking the FDA website also, and you have approximately 1,350 FDA inspectors that cover the whole gamut of all types of food. Only 85 work in seafood. Those 85 are in charge of 90 ports. That's less than one inspector per port. Now imagine how many containers come in every day. For example, in Long Beach, California, which is the biggest port in the nation, in particular seafood imports, they just can't cope with it. And if you have this tremendous amount of products that are coming in that have been rejected, and as they're only checking less than 1%, you can imagine what's getting through. 98-99% of everything that comes into this country is just rubber stamped and approved by FDA to come into food supplies.
Well, Carlos, in doing some research and some other information on some investigations that we've been informed of in the past, just because if the shipment is detained and rejected, are we then safe? Is that shipment destroyed, or is there other ways that this will find its way back, that rejected shipment will find its way back into the U.S.?
Well, you know, there's a lot of loopholes in the system. For example, let's take one. If you have a container of fish that mahi, for example, that's rejected for histamine, there's a certain level that it's already could be a health hazard, and it is rejected, then that container is supposed to go back out of the country. And what a lot of these importers do is they recycle the product, they ship it back either to Mexico or they ship it back to the Pacific, and they repack it and re-import it to a different port. And like we said before, 98-99% of the imports get rubber stamped when they come in, so there's a great chance that container will be allowed back in, unbeknownst to FDA, that it's the same product they rejected on a previous circumstance.
So, listeners out there probably thinking, well, why go through so much trouble for so little? What are these shipments comprised of? What is the estimated cost of some of these shipments?
Well, let's take, for example, a container of shrimp or a lobster. You know, you're talking $10, $20 a pound. They're normally 40-foot containers, so, you know, it could be close to $1 million worth of seafood in one container.
So it's worth accepting the rejection or the refusal for import at one port and then repackaging, sending it back to Mexico and then trying to introduce it into Texas?
Yeah, you've got all the borders, you know, that with between Mexico and U.S. that pretty much they can bring it back in under false documentation, you know, after it's been repacked and relabeled. And cost-wise, that's more effective than taking the product and dumping it in a back in the country of origin.
I see. Well, the it's mind-boggling that what is being caught. I'm looking at the Philippines. Looked at the records for Thailand, for Vietnam, and it's simply amazing. The amount of tainted and bad fish. And what I noticed in a large number of these shipments, it spelled right out, carbon monoxide treated tuna. And basically it says that it was rejected because it was filthy, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you got countries like the Philippines, you know, they're out of the reach of Food and Drug and U.S. law, that they don't have to really comply with HACCP, which is the regulations here in this country to maintain the plants in top shape. And they'll take product, you know, and ship it here. And if you would see how that product is processed, you wouldn't even feed it to your animal, to your cat.
Mm-hmm. You know, I looked at the definitions on the federal government's, on the Food and Drug Administration's definitions of reasons that they give for rejection. And as I said, you heard me say filthy. It's right there. Reason for rejection is filthy. And that's section 402A, parenthesis 3, 801A3, adulteration. Says the charge, the article appears to consist in whole or in part of a filthy, putrid, or decomposed substance, or be otherwise unfit for food. Now, these are the same plants that are shipping, and these shipments are seized or detained or rejected. But what about those that go undetected and unrefused, and so they end up on our shelf in the stores? Here at the big box stores and the grocery stores.
Well, that's correct. They end up, you know, in the food chain, whether it be a restaurant or a supermarket. You know, the distributors will sell this product, and unfortunately, you know, I'm not going to say all of it is bad, but quite a bit is getting by that should not be, and our government just can't keep up with it.
And I noticed not just tuna. I'm noticing there were mislabeled paka paka, misbranding. I noticed there were shrimp, and there's nitrofurans. They reject it because it has these chemicals that are used in raising shrimp. What is going on?
Well, you've got different subjects there. Let's take, for example, the relabeling. That really falls under economic fraud, because what people will do is, they, for example, go to Vietnam and buy what's called a basa filet, which is a form of a channel catfish, which is like an aquaculture. It's raised actually in their rivers, in cages. And that fish, when you fillet it, it looks very similar to a grouper. And as you well know, a legitimate grouper in the Gulf, you know, you're talking $8 a pound. So a lot of markets, like, for example, in Florida, a lot of restaurants, people order grouper fillets. And what they're being served is actually basa fillet as a repack. And you had a situation last year where finally the government, after, you know, numerous complaints from consumers and newspaper articles, actually the media is the one that finally put the heat to the government, and they were able to indict and convict a company known as Panhandle Seafood out of Panama City. The owner was a Vietnamese gentleman by the name of Danny Nguyen. And he was convicted and sentenced to 4.5 years in jail and a $1.1 million fine. He had imported over 1 million pounds of pasta fillets from Vietnam, repacked it in Florida in his plant, and marked it as grouper fillets. And all this went throughout the country, sold as grouper fillets.
And grouper, just the word grouper or snapper brings in, makes the mouth water and the taste bud get excited, right?
Right, because, you know, everybody wants to either eat a genuine snapper or a genuine grouper, and they're getting all these other products that are mislabeled, like in the case of snapper, you could take perch, for example. You could take a rockfish, anything that has a red skin, and they'll mark it red snapper fillet. And the pasta, for example, is a $2 item. So if you're bringing in 40,000 pounds at $2, that's $80,000, and you can turn it around and sell it for roughly $8, $320,000, that's a heck of a profit on one container.
And again, they're selling us catfish fillets for and representing it as passing it off as a snapper or grouper.
That's correct. And you know, we're catching maybe one out of a thousand that are doing it. And it's terrible, and the consumer really has to be educated. Fortunately, they've come up with a DNA test whereby you can actually test the samples, and this is how this whole thing started last year, or a couple of years ago, actually, but he was finally convicted last year, where reporters from local papers were sending these fish to the labs, and the labs were coming back with different species other than grouper. Out of, let's say, 100% fillets, maybe 10, 15% were actually genuine grouper. The rest were actually bassa fillets or any other kind of similar species like tilapia. And it's very difficult to tell because, you know, once you take the skin and the head off the fish, who's to judge what really it is unless you put it through a lab?
Right, and that's what we had to do with the Don Quixote case, where they're actually passing off opaca-paca, and there's a company on the Big Island that is actually bringing it in and passing it off, and was actually investigated for that. Don't know what happened to the case. But let me ask you, from an honest opinion, now I've been harping on this carbon monoxide issue and talking about the threat it poses to the public, and I'd like to get your honest opinion. And what is the purpose in the industry, from the industry standpoint, what is the purpose and use behind carbon monoxide? Why do they use it?
Well, as we all know, carbon monoxide is a very toxic gas, okay? It's actually a natural byproduct in the process of a combustion of a fossil fuel, for example, wood, oil, gasoline. What comes out of your car is carbon monoxide. It's a byproduct. But what we are doing now, where Food and Drug has approved a process allowing plants overseas to use this industrial carbon monoxide process, which is really not what most of the world uses, which is a wood smoke process. Both have the same contaminant as a result, but the percentage of a wood-induced smoke carbon monoxide is 30 to 40%, which is not a problem for human consumption. But when you use an industrial carbon monoxide process, then you're basically getting 100% carbon monoxide. And this is a tasteless, odorless chemical or process which is really used to hide and conceal bad seafood. You could take a piece of fish that is already spoiled, put it through this carbon monoxide process, and it comes out bright colored, that it looks like it just came out of the water. And a lot of the smoke, in particular tuna, which has a natural oxidation process, as soon as it is processed, starts turning dark in color. So they put it through this carbon monoxide treatment to keep the color nice and bright to make it look like it's very fresh. It just came out of the water, and people are not aware of this process. And when you go to these plants, like in the Philippines, you know, there some of them have been known to take large steel cylinders, and they actually pump the fumes from a motor vehicle to induce the process of industrial carbon monoxide. And this is insane. Now, the rest of the world, Europe and Canada, prohibit this process of industrial carbon monoxide. And the U.S. Food and Drug has allowed it in this country.
Wow. I'm looking at a refusal action by FDA, and follow this. Just in May 2008, first page there, shipment came in. It says, frozen tuna processed with carbon monoxide. It was yellowfin tuna. Another shipment, yellowfin tuna treated with carbon monoxide. Processed with carbon monoxide, yellowfin tuna. Big eye tuna, frozen with monoxide. Processed with carbon monoxide, big eye tuna again. Saku blocks, carbon monoxide. Sashimi, carbon monoxide. So it seems that everything involving tunas, and I also noticed they seized some that and rejected some that had mahi-mahi. So no fish is immune from this. They're finding to use it in everything, huh?
No, because, you know, you got to understand the process. When the fish comes out of the water, it immediately starts to decompose. You know, you have rigor mortis setting in. And the way to stop that is really ice. Very plain and simple. But a lot of these overseas fishermen, they don't have the infrastructure, you know, like we have here in this country, where a boat can go out and fish with ice, and the fish can go in the hold, stay a couple of days, come back in the plant and process it under HACCP regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Over there, a lot of fishermen don't even have ice. So that fish is, for example, you take mahi, you know, that sun is hitting it, and the natural chemical decomposition of histamine sets in, and it becomes alarming as to the levels that can generate without the ice. And all this product is then processed in a plant and shipped over here.
Wow.
And if, you know, they're checking less than 1%, imagine how much is getting through with these levels of decomposition, filth, chemicals, toxic chemicals, and the consumer is not aware of it and is you know, just taking chances.
Mm-hmm.
And the health thing, it really, you know, it's something that you can't really tell right away unless you have like a salmonella outbreak. But even then, as you've seen with the last couple of weeks with the tomato issue, the government really doesn't have its hands on the situation. They don't know where it originates, where it really, if it is a tomatoes or what, or any other vegetable.
Right. Well, Carlos, if you'd hold that thought, there's a much, much more I want to talk about on this. If you would, I'm going to take a small break. And this is the Carol Cox Show. With me is Carlo Parisi, a former fish, seafood expert, buyer, importer, exporter. So hold on, and we'll be right back.
Fish lovers of Hawaii, listen up, please, because there's some good news and some bad news. The bad news is that the state and federal governments have closed the main Hawaiian Islands fisheries for 7 bottom fish species. This closure affects the so-called Deep Seven, meaning Opakapaka, Kalikali, Onaga, Ehu, Jindai, Sea Bass, and Lehi. So from now until September 1st, you can't catch them, eat them, give them away, or even have one on your boat. The good news is that the Deep Seven fisheries of the northwestern Hawaiian Islands are loaded with fish and are open year-round. Not too many boats are allowed to fish the northwest these days, but you can ask your favorite fish store or restaurant to keep an eye out for you when their catches do arrive at the fish auction. So good luck and bon appetit.
Thank you.
righty. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. With me is Mr. Carlos Parisi. Carlos, welcome back.
Thank you.
Carlos, we were talking, and you mentioned briefly about HACCP. Now, I'm informed that HACCP here, it's a very strict, and they actually follow through, they being the FDA, and actually had a recent inspection of the auction block here, the local auction block. And here's what they, I'm told now, that they had to go through, and they passed the test, but they had the plastic sheets that hang over the door. They were observed walking on the wooden pallets. They were observed having the fish iced properly, but just the head was not having enough ice. The FDA is very strict. They took those are manini compared to what you find in the Philippines and Vietnam and what have you, because we don't really know if they're adhering to HACCP. But up here at the local fish is actually they're being watched. The fish cops or the pathogen cops or the FDA or the USDA or whomever is on top of this, right?
Right.
And so that brings me to another point. I'm told by some of the big stores and their representative that we can't stop importing and selling this carbon monoxide treated fish or the other fish that is treated with chemicals because it would give our competitors an upper edge. So I'd like to ask you, is there any real benefits or is there any pitfalls when we buy foreign as we do? Are we really cheating ourselves? Are we getting a better deal or can we get a better deal here locally?
Well, there's different points in that subject also. For example, out of all the seafood that's consumed in this country, approximately 84% is imported. Okay? Now, it's imported because of you've got the cost, the labor factor overseas is very low, the supply, etc. But when you, for example, if you were to take shrimp, you walk into a Safeway and you buy a bag of shrimp, product of Bangladesh, product of Taiwan, and you take that product and you throw it out, you're going to find that the net weight is almost never there, or the count.
Mm-hmm.
Because the product is glazed so much that you're actually paying for water. Now, of course, it's going to be a lower cost than a domestic shrimp or even a Mexican shrimp from the Gulf. But in the long run, you're actually paying more because when you put the factor of the water that you bought, the price of the local product is better. Now, you could argue that also for snapper, for tuna, for swordfish. Most of the overseas products are adulterated. I mean, I'm talking more than the majority because of the prime factor is money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everybody's trying to make as much as they can on the product. Now, if we were to pay top dollar as buyers overseas, we can get the right product. Now, we're talking in general. You've got companies like Costco here in this country that are very quality conscious, and they will sell you a product and guarantee it. And there is an exception to the rule. Costco's product passes with flying colors because they will make sure that that boat, that product, the minute it comes off the boats, they will make sure that who they're dealing with, the plants that they contract with, that they're buying from, and there's a quality control check better than the government that they have set up to make sure that the consumer gets their money's worth.
So they don't share that same opinion that we have to sell this carbon monoxide because the other guy down the street's going to sell it.
No, of course not. I mean, carbon monoxide is a toxic gas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, carbon monoxide, I mean, it kills me that Food and Drug You know, we're supposed to be a developed nation, and the rest of the world, like, for example, Europe and Canada, it's prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you also check with Food and Drug, you will note that they only have two plants in the whole world approved for this industrial carbon monoxide. One is in Oman, okay, and the other one, I believe, is in somewhere in Asia. I'm not sure if it was Thailand or Singapore, but, you know, the rest of the plants aren't even approved, and yet they're allowing all these imports to come in, and that's why you see quite a bit high number of rejections.
I see. Now, you mentioned, and we've talked before briefly, other chemicals, sodium tripolyphosphate.
Well, sodium tripolyphosphate is a chemical that, if it's used properly, it's a good chemical. It's really used to prevent moisture loss and to prevent bacteria growth. When going back again, when the fish comes out of the water, the bacteria start proliferating, and you've got to somehow find a method to stop it. And sodium tripoly, if used properly, it's okay. But the problem is that it's abused in the majority of the cases because they dip whatever it is, scallop, shrimp, fish, in it to absorb more water. And, for example, you take an item like a lobster tail, which sells for $20 a pound approximately, depending on the market where you're at in this country. But if you can pump it up with 30-40% water, you know, you're selling $8 of water in every pound.
So is that why when I see a lobster or shrimp or scallops in ice, basically I'm biting into and buying into the old game? I'm being duped? I'm being sold water?
It's overkill, because if you take an item, you don't have to put such a large coating of ice. If you can lightly dip it in tripoly and glaze it, that's all you need to do. But when you glaze it to the point where you're getting an ice cube, and you're taking that product and throwing it out to cook it, you know, out of 10 pounds, you're lucky if you get half in actually shrimp, mm-hmm. for example, or lobster. So, you know, you're talking a lot of money is being made by these importers and distributors and everybody along the whole chain in selling a product that is very, very excessively dipped in tripoly to absorb moisture or water. Water's cheap.
And they're making big profit just on selling us water. Just
oh yeah, I mean there again. Let's take a container of lobster tails, $800,000. If you can pump it 20-30%, that's mm-hmm. a lot of money, right?
Right.
And it's all water. And the problem is we're not educated enough, and the government doesn't step in to do their job. They have issues with, you know, budget cutbacks, shortage of people. But then again, you also have Food and Drug, which last year was in front of Congress, where they were trying to justify because of the cutbacks. And I don't know if you had heard about that, but they had 13 labs across the country that they used to inspect their products, and they were wanted to cut it back to 7.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of increasing the capacity, we're decreasing it. What's going to happen? More importers are going to be able to bring in more product that's adulterated.
So would you, in an opinion, do you believe that people can avoid some of the use in chemicals and whether by buying local or be a little better assured that they're going to get a fresher product by buying local opposed to buying the imported?
If you can buy product that's processed in this country on the HACCP regulations, you've got a better chance of getting your money's worth, and it's a safe product.
I see.
Because it's under the microscope. We're actually overkilling, you know, in this country, our producers of seafood, and that's why a lot of them have gone out of business.
Right.
you know, with all these regulations. Some of them are good, but there's a few that, you know, we could do without. But we're overkilling our local people, yet we're allowing the people overseas to ship whatever garbage they can put together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you got, for example, I'll give you another example. You got regulations in the Gulf of Mexico with items like grouper, like kingfish, red snapper. You've got quotas set up, which are good rules. But yet, when the fish travels, I mean, the fish doesn't know borders, and it goes down to the Mexican peninsula there, the Yucatan Peninsula, those guys don't follow the law like we do. They'll catch the fish. You know, they don't care what size it is. And they'll pack it and ship it back into this country and sell it. And most of the time they get through because Food and Drug can't check everything. Whatever they check less than 1%, they'll kick it back.
Yeah, that's what a number of the complaints, and even myself personally, have great concerns with, is that the foreign fleets are really not adhering to or observing or employing any measures or very minimal measures to protect turtles, marine mammals, and others, and even certain species of fish, because they just don't have the regulatory bodies that we have here in place.
No, that's true. Unfortunately, anything beyond our 200 to 300, you know, miles economic zone areas, we can't. They're beyond the reach of our law,
mm-hmm.
and they can do whatever they want. And you've got countries like Taiwan, in particular, that are all over the world with these factory vessels just raping the oceans, and they don't care about the environment or preserving. They're going to fish it until there's no more left.
And you mentioned a couple of things there, and I found rather interesting. When there's closed seasons here, then the back door is open and inviting for mislabeling and all of the other underhanded practices.
Yeah, you've got, you know, so many species that have been documented. For example, I'm going back to the Gulf of Mexico because that's really an area that I concentrated it. Used to have conch in the Gulf of Mexico. Doesn't exist anymore. You used to have lobster tails. Very rarely can you catch one now. The size of the kingfish that used to run anywhere 15, 20 pounds average, now you're talking 3-4 pounds. Yellowtail snapper has practically disappeared. Lane snapper has practically disappeared. A little bit of red snapper and grouper that are left, you know, there's only so many months of the year that they can fish it. But unfortunately, the other countries are not adhering to the laws. And it's kind of difficult also for a fisherman, you know, that surviving on his catch, that if he catches something, he's going to throw it back in the water, you know, when that means money on the table.
So he puts it away and hides it. And speaking of hiding, we talked earlier, and we were tossing around some of the ways in which importers evade or avoid inspections. You had mentioned one about the manner in which they stack, or the importers stack their boxes in the containers for inspection. Shine a little light on that for me.
Well, unscrupulous importers and exporters overseas, they will take the cream of the crop and load it on the tail end of the container by the doors.
I see.
That way, when the product gets to the dock, if Food and Drug chooses to sample anything or inspect the product, it will be past the flying colors. Now, the proper way to avoid that is to wait until the product is unloaded and spot check it at the freezer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that way any inspector can walk up and choose, you know, any item that he wishes. But unfortunately, you know, the inspectors, there's quite a few that leave a lot to be desired because, of course, you know, they'll ask for an item to come out of the freezer and the importer's already, you know, stacked the pallet that he knows is going to pass.
Right.
You know, because the inspector doesn't want to go in a freezer that's, you know, 5 degrees minus below zero and look for product. Go wait outside and let them bring it out.
So,
but you know, the system has to be overhauled, and you've got to have these inspectors on their toes. And unfortunately, the majority are not, and that's why we have this tremendous problem. And it's something that we're all consuming, eating.
Now, should, from your professional standpoint, should the local fisheries, the local legislators, be concerned with any economical impact, negative impact on this industry locally at the rate we're going? Do you believe that they could be impacted or even put out of business?
Oh, they have been. I mean, you can see all over the country. You take, for example, Bedford, Massachusetts. There used to be a prime seafood port the last 100 years, and it's just been dying, almost nil. Same thing on the West Coast. You've got, situations all over Northern California, Oregon. The industry is collapsing as far as domestically.
Mm-hmm.
We're overkilling the situation here with regulations that some of them are really... Take, for example, right here in my backyard in Hilo. You know, we used to have the auction here in Sweet Talk. That was stopped 2 or 3 years ago because of HACCP regulations. The local company here decided that it was not worth the trouble in making changes and investing that money to adhere to the new regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a nice little setup, which was very hygienic, very clean, very organized. It's finished. That's it. It's history now.
Wow.
And it was even a tourist attraction. They used to have the auctions every morning when the boats, the small amount of boats that came in. So that's a good example of how we're overkilling our backyard, but yet we allow the countries overseas to ship all this garbage over here.
And then all of the good fish leaves our port going to Japan and other places. And it, with the $2 difference, I'm noticing maybe in some instances the fish that comes in and it's being sold as poke on the at Safeway and other places, sometimes $6, $7 a pound, depending on the store. Is there any big difference? Is it worth for the consumer? Do you think it would be wise if they were to just eat less of that fish and buy more local? They'd be a little safer, is that in your opinion?
Definitely, they would be much safer. Even though it's a little bit more money in the long run, you're actually paying the same amount because you got to factor in the glazing, the water absorption, the risk of chemicals that are added overseas that sometimes we don't even know what they're using over there,
Mm-hmm.
So I would say consume locally if you can. And I know it's difficult, if you're stuck in the middle of nowhere, like, for example, in Utah, and you want to eat seafood. But what the consumer can do is where it hurts the industry is in their pocket. If you see a bag of shrimp that's heavily glazed, throw it out, test it, and then go back to the store and ask for your money back.
Mm-hmm. Well, no. It's rather discouraging when I don't consume much meat now, and especially just trying to get away from it. But those that do should be a little more protected, and I don't believe that, if it even got through here, the sad part of this situation is that I don't believe that our state government is really doing enough to monitor and sample. You see, if something got through, I don't see any recalls or any announcements. And speaking of recalls, just to give you a couple of ideas, and we're going to wrap this up. I got about 4 more minutes. But here in Honolulu or in Hawaii, we had the issue of melamine. Well, it wasn't public that melamine had gotten through in fish food on the Big Island, Kona Kampachi, or had food that had come in from China. That food was being fed to some of the fish they had to destroy. Oceanic Institute was also in receipt of some of that. Now, apparently they claim that the fish at the shrimp at Oceanic was not being sold and whatever. I'm not going to dispute it or take issue with it. But it got through. And then there's other issues in talking about packaging and representation. I'm aware of and been informed that Kona Kampachi is complaining that there's a company who is selling the similar fish and claiming that they're buying it from Kona Kampachi. So imagine what's going on here. And you had mentioned something about repackaging. A person importing fish from Japan or wherever and repackaging. How does that work?
Well, like if you take the Kampachi, right? Let's assume you bring it from Japan, you repack it here, and you get a government agency like USBC, Department of Commerce, National Fisheries Department, and you have them inspect it. Well, now the product is U.S. product, and you could sell it as Hawaii Kampachi.
And it could have come from an insanitary, filthy place or whatever, as long as once it gets cleared here and packaged and gets certified by National Marine Fisheries Service, Department of Commerce inspector. The world is open to it, huh?
That's correct. You know, you just touched something, meat. Right? USDA inspects 16% of meat. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they limit to 10 ports in the whole country where an importer could bring it through. Going back to FDA, which has 90 ports, and they inspect less than 1%.
Mm-hmm.
And you also mentioned China. China is the country
mm-hmm.
where the majority of seafood comes in here. Roughly 23% of our seafood imports come from China. And we all know what happened this past summer with the chemical issues in pet foods.
Mm-hmm.
Those same chemicals, like you just mentioned, are being used in animal feed, and it's being given to pond-raised shrimp that work at some catfish.
Well,
Louisiana area.
Well, boy, I'd like to continue this, Carlos. It's been very informative, and for folks out there, if you want to learn more about any of these issues, I suggest you go to the seafoodbusiness.com, and you can actually read some of these, or go to the FDA site to look for the refusals, and just type in species or the product or the country. And Carlos, thank you for calling in and sharing with us. That's very good.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it. And this is the Carol Cox Show, and next week we'll be joining you, and coming up will be the Hawaii Bulletin Board with Calvin Griffin. He is in Pennsylvania broadcasting from the Independence Hall. He has a walk up there, and we hope to hear from him very shortly. Again, thank you for joining, and if you have any questions or any information, you can podcast this show or earlier shows at carolcox.com, and we have a blog there, so feel free and aloha.
Fish lovers of Hawaii, listen up, please, because there's some good news and some bad news. The bad news is that the state and federal governments have closed the main Hawaiian Islands fisheries for 7 bottom fish species. This closure affects the so-called Deep Seven, meaning Opakapaka, Kalikali, Onaga, Ehu, Jindai, Sea Bass, and Lehi. So from now until September 1st, you can't catch them, eat them, give them away, or even have one on your boat. The good news is that the Deep Seven fisheries of the northwestern Hawaiian Islands are loaded with fish and are open year-round. Not too many boats are allowed to fish the northwest these days, but you can ask your favorite fish store or restaurant to keep an eye out for you when their catches do arrive at the fish auction. So good luck and bon appetit!